We are to be joined shortly by our good pal, Evan Roberts from WFAN in New York. We've spoken with him here previously on the program, and he is a guy who is very, very well versed on things with the Cleveland sports, or the New York sports scene and the national sports scene. I started to say Cleveland as a sort of Freudian slip there, but one that I'm sure he would find hilarious, again, especially in light of, as we said previously, his thoughts on the so-called inevitability of LeBron James signing with the New York Knicks. So that is something that we'll have to talk about with him, as well as everything else going on in the world of sports here. And I think we got him on line three. We got him here. Just breaking news here right before we bring him on. A goal for Team Canada there as the arena erupts. Shocking that Evgeny Nabokov might have given up a goal that might not have been 100% legit there. But I'll have to look at the replay here, catch this, and okay. Nice fast break getting set up by Team Canada. And, you know what? Got to put that on the defense. That wasn't on him. Oh, God, how sickening that Dan Boyle, that Miami of Ohio piece of crap, looks like he's going to get the assist. That just ruins my mood. Well, I count on this guy to pick up my mood a little bit. Always have a lot of fun talking to him. An expert on all things New York and national, Evan Roberts from WFAN in New York. Evan, good to have you on tonight. How you doing?
I'm great, but you just ruined my night because I was TiVoing the big Canada-Russia game, and you're breaking a play down. What are you doing to me?
Sorry, no more spoilers. Evan, it's like two and a half minutes into the game. There will be a moratorium on spoilers when you're on with us here. So, I'm sorry. I see a guy like Dan Boyle, who went to my arch rival college, do something, and it just disgusts me and just causes me great revulsion.
No, so. I understand, and I am an expert on one thing about Cleveland sports. I'm an expert on stealing your biggest star, which we're about to do in a couple of months.
You're still hanging to that. As I said before a break, you think LeBron James, D. Wade, and three guys from the D League are going to take you anywhere?
Well, no, I'm not a believer with all the other Knicks fans. I think LeBron James is coming to the New Jersey Nets. I think he's coming to Brooklyn eventually once they move there. And I think the key to the whole thing, let me give this advice to Cleveland fans. When the lottery occurs on May 19th, pray John Wall doesn't end up with the Nets. Because if he ends up with the Nets, you could write it down. LeBron's going to join him. He's going to join Jay-Z. And he's going to get to pick his own coach. I mean, what other team can offer that to LeBron James? Pick your own coach, play with John Wall, and oh yeah, there's Brook Lopez. I mean, we got a pretty good offer that nobody else can match, you have to admit.
No, okay, yeah. That would make me nervous, the John Wall thing. The Jay-Z thing's overblown, though. You're better than that, Evan. That's a media concoction. What does he own, like 0.45% of the team, and he's friends with LeBron?
You know
LeBron's
what,
friends with a lot of
celebrities. I understand
celebrities.
What you're saying about that, but here's where I'll jump in. When Mikhail Prokhorov bought the New Jersey Nets, the first guy he met with was Jay-Z. Oh. And the reason he did that is because he wants to win. This guy wants to be the George Steinbrenner of the NBA. Not that he knows who George Steinbrenner is, but he wants to spend a lot of money and he wants to make a difference. And he knows the key to all that is LeBron James. So I agree, Jay-Z doesn't own 50% of the Nets. I'm not saying that. But Prokhorov has already approached him and said, let's make this happen. And Jay-Z is going to use all his pull that he's got to try to convince LeBron to come to the Nets and eventually Brooklyn once the arena's built.
Well, you know, it's funny because I said to a friend of mine from the area, the one guy in the New York media who's not drinking the Kool-Aid about LeBron going there, my good buddy Lloyd Carroll from the Queens Chronicle, he of the outlandish questions at all of your press conferences out there. I said to him, you know what's funny? You guys were right. You're getting the Messiah in the summer of 2010. The only difference is you didn't know it was going to be John Wall, not LeBron James.
Hey, you know what? As a Nets fan, that's fun. I actually hope the Knicks get completely stiff during this free agency period because they've banked everything on getting LeBron James. I mean, if they don't get LeBron, this offseason is, for the most part, going to be a massive failure. So as a Nets fan, I'm hoping that we get Wall, the Knicks get hosed, and, you know, God forbid the Nets ever added LeBron James, man. That would be the quickest turnaround in NBA history. They'd go from 7 wins to about 65 if they had John Wall and LeBron James.
Well, here's the thing, too. answer this for me. I mean, because I'll tell you, in 2002, 2003, the Cavs clearly were tanking, and they did it in a way so subtle that the league couldn't have done crap about it. Because what they did was they played the entire year without a point guard. Now, while I was screaming and agitating for them to sign Earl Boykins, like the short-sighted fool that I am, they won 17 games, ended up with Coe the best pick in there, and ended up getting him. But again, it's a long shot. It's only about 1-5, give or take. How are the Nets sucking ass so badly? I on paper, now I understand not that deep, but geez, when you got at your core Devin Harris and Brooke Lopez and a couple of these guys here. Now, Devin Harris, from what I understand, may or may not have checked out mentally somewhere along the way with all the crap all of this year, but how did it get to this point? In no way, shape, or form should that be by far the worst team in the league.
You know, it's a question I try to answer every night because I go to, like, every Nets game. I haven't missed a minute this season. And when people ask me that, it's impossible to give an answer because you're right. Not that I'm telling you the Nets are a good team, but the Nets are better than 5-52. And it's funny with Devin Harris. Look, I think that was a problem early. What started off is that they had a ton of injuries early in the season. They had nobody playing. Okay, I mean, they were ravaged by injuries. So I think that contributed to the bad start. Plus, on opening night, they blew a huge lead against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So you have this awful loss to start the year. You had all these injuries, and I think that's what contributed to the 0-18 start and beyond. What's happened since then is incredible because they've been healthy. Devin's played a lot better, because I agree with you. It appeared Devin Harris checked out mentally, but the last 2 weeks he's played so much better. He's been the all-star caliber player that he was last year. Brooke Lopez has had a very solid year. It's almost like this team finds ways to lose. And they're better than this. They shouldn't be 5-52. I mean, honestly, at the beginning of the year, I thought this was a 25-win team, which is nothing to write home about, but it's certainly better than 5-52. It's weird, because I've seen worse teams in the NBA in the last 15 years, including the Cavalier team that you mentioned from that year. So it's really an enigma, and that's why all along I've always thought that they'll find their way to get 10, 11 wins. They won't break the record, but as this season goes on, they find new ways to lose. They had an 18-point lead against the Memphis Grizzlies a few days ago. They completely choked that away with a horrid start to the third quarter. So I don't know, man. It's frustrating because they're much better than 5-52, yet here they are at 5-52.
Absolutely. And while there would have been some people predicting at the beginning of the year that John Wall would be the number one guy in the draft, it's not a situation like it was with LeBron, like it was with Greg Oden, like it was with Yao Ming. He didn't have a big enough bullseye at the beginning of the year to where the Nets would have tanked to get him. Plus, as you said, you know, if they've tanked, it's been in the most subtle way in the history of sports because, again, they didn't gut the team.
Yeah, you know what? They're not tanking. I mean, I look at the look in Brook Lopez's eyes and the look in Devin Harris's eyes. They're not tanking. They're just finding ways to lose. The one thing I'll say about Devin, which is weird, you never hear players, for the most part. I mean, occasionally you'll hear, but for the most part, you don't hear NBA players talk freely about, hey, we've got cap room, or hey, we're going to get a good draft pick. But whenever Devin's asked about this horrid season, he brings it up. I mean, because I think he thinks he's going to be around for a long time, which is remains to be seen. I think he may be dealt at the end of the year, depending on the package. But Devin cites it a lot. He says, hey, we're going to get a good draft pick. Hey, we got a lot of cap room. But I don't think this has been done on purpose. This is just kind of a perfect storm to start the year. They got off to a terrible start. And right now they've got themselves probably the most incompetent head coach in the history of basketball in Kiki Vandeweghe. And if Lawrence Frank was still coaching this team would have a lot more victories than it has now. So it was the perfect storm of a bad start plus an incompetent head coach. And voila, 5-52.
Probably, yeah. You know, and these desperation firings really only work, it seems like, in the NHL, you know, like with Columbus and St. Louis, with what they've done with whacking their coaches. The Lawrence Frank thing, it doesn't work so well in the NBA, these things of get a short-term bump by whacking our guy.
Yeah, and I think that Lawrence Frank was only fired, honestly, because Rod Thorne likes him, and Rod didn't want his name attached to a team that could lose 70 games. And once they got off start with all the injuries, I think Rod did him a favor. He didn't want to soil his, because Lawrence wants to get back into coaching in the NBA. So I think that was more of a favor of him being fired than anything else.
Rod Thorne as Dr. Kevorkian, very interesting. That's that's something we learned here tonight. Let me get your take on a national story as well. I know it's something clearly you were talking about a lot on Friday, probably carrying over to the start of the week here. This whole Tiger Woods situation here. And again, just as far as I'm concerned, just the complete disingenuousness of the entire situation, using his mom as a prop, the arrogance of, I'm not going to talk about it beyond today. I mean, what were some of your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, you can't say that his mom was a prop. I believe that was legit. Didn't you see the look in her eyes of disappointment? I mean, she looked horrified. She looked like genuinely, like, disgusted by her son. You didn't believe that?
You know what? Honestly, on a human level, maybe I'm a little biased, because for those of us that don't have a mom anymore to use as a prop, even if we'd want to, I just kind of look at him, and I don't know. I just kind of feel revulsion when I see that, because
maybe it's just jealousy on my part. Look, because I think that it was an orchestrated event. I can't deny that. And he's trying to get back in the good graces of his sponsorships. And maybe I'm naive, but that was the one part of that whole press conference or conference call, whatever the heck you want to call it, since he didn't take questions. That was the one part of it that I actually thought was genuine. And again, maybe I'm just being naive about it, because I was to my partner, Joe Beningo, when we did the show Friday, I said, can you imagine explaining that in front of your mom with millions of people watching? And even Joe was like, well, I wouldn't be able to do it. I'm like, I wouldn't be able to do it either if my mom was giving me a look like that. So that part of it I actually thought was genuine. But the rest of it, it was a charade. But I also think that it doesn't matter. I mean, he didn't really owe me an apology or you an apology. He didn't owe anybody an apology. All he owed an apology to was his wife and his kids for embarrassing them and for cheating on their mom. That's what he owed an apology for. He didn't owe an apology to me or anybody else. I'm not a big believer in the whole he's a role model thing. You know, he wasn't doing all these commercials because he was a nice guy. I thought he was doing the commercials because he was the greatest golfer in the world, and he was different in a white man's sport. Here's a guy with mixed race who's really good at it. I thought that was the reason he got endorsements. I don't think it was because he was a genuinely nice guy. He isn't even a nice guy, if you ask anybody in the media. So, though it was fake and it was orchestrated, I also kind of say, leave the guy alone. Okay, it was a personal thing. He didn't kill anybody. He didn't harm dogs like that horrible human being, Michael Vick. He didn't shoot himself in the leg like Plaxico. He cheated on his wife, and it's only the business of his wife, him, and his kids. That's it to me.
So can we look forward to a video on FAN.com with the equivalent of leave Britney alone?
Exactly. Yes.
All right. No, fair enough. Different strokes for different folks here. In terms of the Olympics, and again, I'm maintaining the spoiler-free atmosphere here after what I said at the beginning of the segment here tonight. But thoughts on Sunday night? It was epic. It was just, you know, one of those unbelievable moments. And you know, Kessler at the end of the game, I'm already calling it, you know, the YouTube moment of 2010 so far. Again, there are some people that are going, you know, a little overboard and comparing it to Miracle on Ice. And I think most of us realize how stupid that is. But talk about that night, what it meant, what it could mean going forward here, maybe for the sport.
Let me tell you something. That was awesome, especially with Kessler doing it in Vancouver. I mean, you talk about mixed emotions that those fans must have had. Actually, it wasn't mixed emotions at all. They were just ticked off, angry Canadians losing to the United States. But it was a tremendous hockey game. I think it's good for the sport, but I don't think it's going to translate in anything once the NHL season resumes, because I think that once the NHL season resumes, people are going to say, boy, this is a lot more boring than the Olympics were, because the Olympics are, you know, you got countries. You got the patriotism angle. Every guy is, for the most, I don't want to say a superstar, but every guy's well-known. While once you start to get to, you know, Anaheim Mighty Duck versus Phoenix games, most of America is not going to own 80% of the players. And I think when you compare regular season hockey to the Olympics, unfortunately, comes up short. Now, if it was the Olympics going right into the postseason, I think then, like, it could kind of translate to people saying, oh, boy, this is pretty cool. Let me check. This is entertaining. But the fact that it's going from Olympic hockey, which is incredibly exciting, to the fact where I'm TiVoing Russia-Canada and I'm going to go home and watch it, it's going to be a disappointment when the regular season starts, because the regular season is not nearly as good as the Olympics.
Well, no other sport's got an all-star tournament like this. The best players in the world, essentially, with few exceptions, but the best players in the world condensed onto like seven teams. It really is an unbelievable event, and yeah, it's something that just unto itself is absolutely amazing. And then the part that I'm seeing that a lot of people seem not to have picked up on, the pre-tournament favorites here. In my mind, I thought Canada, Sweden, Russia in that order. A lot of other people probably would have said the same thing. They're all on the other side of the bracket now, Evan. That's the beautiful part.
I know. Now that's the beauty of getting off to a quick start and winning your first games. And it certainly gives the United States the clear path. Though earlier today, 3 o'clock Eastern time start, as it's 0-0 late in the second period, and they blow the whistle on that first goal by the Team USA, and unbelievably, by like a tenth of a second, the clock expired. I wasn't thinking, oh boy, the bracket sets up for the U.S. It was a little dicey there. And then Zach Parise with the empty netter with like 10 seconds to go, which was nice as a New Yorker seeing a local, I'm an Islander fan, seeing a New Jersey Devil get it done. But the bracket certainly sets up well for them, but they got a scare today. The truth is, you're running into a hot goaltender, anything can happen, and that's what almost cost them today.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Hiller rose to the occasion again, as he has before, and it was just absolutely just riveting how close that game was, much like the scares that the Czechs and the Slovaks had last night. You know, we haven't seen the monster upsets like at past Olympics yet. No, well, actually, and now there can't be, because everything the rest of the way is Big Seven teams. But, you know, there's been no Belarus over Sweden. There's been no Switzerland over Canada like there was at each of the last two Olympics. But there were many upsets in terms of these great powers getting taken down to the wire, Evan.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I think that seeing no upsets until late is actually a good thing, because I think we all want to see, you know, U.S.-Russia or U.S.-Canada the rematch for a gold medal like we saw in Oto. It would be very exciting. It would be great for TV ratings, especially because these guys, I think that's the big difference between this and the, you know, Miracle on Ice. I know people want to, like, try to compare it, but it's incomparable. I mean, it's uncomparable on so many levels. First of all, the Team USA is not a bunch of, you know, college kids. It's not a bunch right out of high school. It's a bunch of professionals. It's a bunch of, you know, well-known, respected NHL players. So, and of course, the social climate's a lot different. We're not taking on the big bad Soviet Union, but if we could get, and whoever it is, Canada or Russia, whoever wins today, I don't think it's a big deal, because both of them have that type of star power. If you could get U.S. Canada or U.S. Russia or even U.S. Sweden, you know, you got yourself a very entertaining final. It'll probably get a big rating. It's probably going to get a bigger rating than any other NHL game that you're going to see in the playoffs or regular season. I think that Canada-U.S. game, like, doubled the Winter Classic, and that one was on MSNBC. So it just shows you that the star is winning here, and people are getting into it, especially the patriotism angle of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I had friends commenting on my rah-rah stuff I put up on Facebook the other night. Friends of mine that I know only watch hockey once in a blue moon. So that's what's great. It's reaching those people right now, you know, who aren't as much into it normally. A couple things I want to ask you before we wrap here tonight, Evan. I want to ask you a couple of wrestling things here, because I know you're talking, I want to expand on this and get your you to talk about doing the video blogging at WFAN.com. But I know you've got commentaries you've been doing on wrestling. Talk about, let's start, I want to ask you about the road to WrestleMania, and I also want to ask you about this NXT deal. But let's talk about that. It seemed like Monday night, believe it or not, they actually got off to a really, really solid build for WrestleMania, unlike what they've done in past years and unlike what they've done with this whole guest host gaga and not getting ready for pay-per-views and stuff. They seem to come out of the chute very strong Monday night.
Yeah, no, it was very, very good, and I like where they're going for WrestleMania, but here's my one problem. Here's my one complaint. Here's the one thing I'm going to bitch about. I hate, and they used to do this years ago, when you have a title change at the pay-per-view before WrestleMania, and it used to be No Way Out, and now it's this Elimination Chamber thing. And we saw it twice. We saw both titles change hands to set up, you know, a WrestleMania main event. I you know, there's something about that I hate. I think that, you know, having a held the title for 6 or 7 months going into WrestleMania, you know, will they finally lose? Will the good guy finally take it from him? Or, you know, if the good guy holding the title, will he finally drop it? I think that's more appealing than a quick title change. I mean, Chris Jericho is the champion now. You know, I understand it was set up perfectly for WrestleMania. The Edge angle's cool. Get Shawn Michaels screwing The Undertaker again. I get it. I know they wanted to give a title to Batista-Cena match, which I agree with. But again, look, title changes. That's my one. Other than that, I think it's going to be a good pay-per-view, and I like the build-up that we're getting. But I quick title changes a month before WrestleMania, and we saw it with both titles this year.
Oh, and you know what? And same thing last year, because last year Triple H and Edge both came out the same way. I agree with you. That's I don't like the title To me, the Elimination Chamber should be to determine a number one contender for WrestleMania, not to have the titles, you know, at stake in those matches, because I agree with you. It jumbles the whole thing up. It confuses it. And I will say, too, you know, I agree with that. But also, Cena Batista, what do you think needs a title on that match more, Cena Batista or Sheamus Triple H?
You know what? I agree with you that Sheamus Triple H needs a title more than Batista Cena, because Batista Cena is a match I think we've been waiting for a long time, even like a year and a half ago. Remember when they had that dumb match at SummerSlam because of that clown Mike? I mean, that was a disaster, because until then, those two had fought. They had like this great rivalry. The two biggest stars had never wrestled before, and of course, they had to blow it a year and a half ago at SummerSlam. But I agree that Triple H Sheamus needs a title more, but Batista Cena for the title is the ultimate, and I don't think they should look at it and say, well, which match needs the title more? I think they should say, what could be the best WrestleMania moment? And Cena Batista finally wrestling, fight the SummerSlam screw up that they had a year and a half ago, for the title is the ultimate. That's the way you close preview. That's the ultimate main event. So I think it was the right decision. I don't like the way it got to that point with the quick title change, but I think having that match for the title, I do like, because that's without a doubt the WrestleMania main event. You know, they always call everything a main event these days at WrestleMania. Oh, this guy's fighting main event. This guy, there's only one main event. We all know that every year. And to me, that's the main event, so it's got a title on the line.
Yeah, well played. I can't argue with that. And yeah, the Cena Batista, the hot-shotting screw-up at SummerSlam in 08, that's a point of frustration for me, too, the way that they just gave it away, you know, just the pop-a-buy rate as they were doing in desperation mode at the time. I want to ask you also about NXT. First of all, I don't even know. Did you get a chance to check it out last night? I only got to check out the very end, but I read about the whole thing.
No, I didn't see it yet. It's one of the things on my TiVo box. Honestly, I wasn't that excited for it because it was so weird to me. Like, I was reading about it, and I haven't read the results, so I don't even know what happened. But just reading about it was like, I know Vince wants to be revolutionary, but it's like, what the hell is it? Like, is it a reality show? Is it actual wrestling? Like, I thought when they canned ECW, they were just going to kind of change the name to something else, but still have wrestling. It would just feature the younger guys. So I'm intrigued to see it because I still don't really know what the hell it is. But I can't tell you I'm excited because I don't think it's going to be any good. But I should have judge. I know that's what I should do.
It's an odd hybrid, and they seem not to have figured out all of the questions that you have raised at this point, as far as, you know, who wins this thing, who whatever, how much of it is going to be, you know, an actual competition versus how much of it is going to be, you know, booked like anything else that they do. It seems like they're leaning towards it being booked like anything else and you know, just being, you know, the pro wrestling version of a competition, if you will. But here's the thing. I will tell you this and get your opinion on this, because I have a kind of a unique take on this. What they did last night with Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, was to have him out there and you know, they were doing the whole angle with The Miz, and, you know, he's more experienced than The Miz. Maybe he should be mentoring The Miz and everything. Michael Cole went into this solid heel mode selling thing of, I don't even know who this guy is, and I'm sick of hearing about you internet freaks talking about stuff, and the only thing that matters is people that are here in WWE, and they had him go into this obnoxious heel mode, you know, backing The Miz. And I'm seeing a lot of stuff on the internet where people are saying, oh, okay, well, that's the WWE's way of turning, you know, people on to Daniel Bryan and getting them to cheer him by making Michael Cole so obnoxious. As somebody that went to Invasion when it was here in 01, I see it the other way, because that audience, people don't believe this when I say this, but I've been to some shows from time to time. They are marks with a capital M. Not smart marks, they are marks. I mean, I heard people at Invasion talking about, I hope they beat them outsider guys from WCW. Okay, those people still exist. And those people can be led, I'm afraid, by somebody like Michael Cole doing this. I think this is Vince McMahon's way of basically burying Daniel Bryan and burying the independent circuit and burying these guys, not to try to make Daniel Bryan a cause celeb. How would you kind of see it?
Well, that's interesting. See, now, you know what you've accomplished? You've actually got me interested now in watching this thing.
Okay.
I had it on the TV, but I really didn't care. But that's intriguing. That's not a bad idea, though, because one thing we've seen about Vince McMahon is sometimes he cares more about his ego and burying people he doesn't like than actually making the product good. I think
yep.
That's what he basically did with WCW.
Uh-huh.
with Dusty Rhodes when he brought him back and put him in that stupid polka dot outfit. So I think you're maybe right. I'm intrigued now to watch it just to see exactly what happened. I was reading something about that today, though, about Michael Cole going off on something about that, and I was like, I don't get it. But now it makes sense. I'll watch it, and I'll give you feedback next time I'm on. I haven't seen it, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing where, you know, the smart marks that I've seen debating it on different message boards here have been like, you know, if you're mad at Vince McMahon and you're mad at Michael Cole and you don't realize they're just pushing your buttons and this is meant to get the fans behind Daniel Bryan, and that by having Michael Cole bury him in such obnoxious fashion, you know, that it's accomplishing what it was meant to accomplish to raise him up. And I'm thinking to myself, it could be just the opposite. Because, you know, for all the knuckle-dragging rubes out there, they're still like, it's still real to me, damn it. You know, Michael Cole says that, and they're going to believe it.
I do like Michael Cole as a heel, though. I like him as a heel. I enjoyed him during that Jerry Springer incident a week and a half. I know it sounds like you're not a big fan of the guest host thing, but when Michael Cole went nuts during the Jerry Springer thing about being the father of Kelly Baby, that was actually pretty hilarious.
You know what? If they could do that and limit it to, like, one thing like that per night, it wouldn't be so bad. Or the other night with Jewel and What's-His-Nuts, the rodeo guy, that was, like, mostly confined to one segment. If they could do that and it didn't intrude on where they were supposed to be going to set stuff up, I guess I wouldn't have as big a problem with it.
Yeah, but you know what? Recently, I think based on those two examples, they kind of have. I think when they first – because at first, the guest host thing was kind of stupid, and it's been stupid at times, but – when they have an intriguing host like it's Bret Hart, or eventually if it's The Rock or something like that, or when it was Tyson, like it's kind of intriguing. But when you have like a Jewel and you have a Jerry Springer, it seems like they've done a good job of kind of just putting it as just comic relief for one segment. Because think about it, what did Jewel and that rodeo guy and Jerry Springer do? They only did that one comedy segment. They really didn't book any matches. I know Michael Cole says Jerry Springer's a lot. Hard time, but I mean, other than that, what's he actually done? They don't really do anything.
Well, that's true. And I will say, too, to give credit where credit's due, the week that John Heder was on, and you gotta, when they were in Knoxville, you gotta understand, I'm a UT football fan, hoops fan. But even I was laughing. John Heater's like, we got this great new coach at USC, and the crowd is booing and throwing crap. No.
That was hilarious.
That was. I mean, for me as a UT football fan to say, now that was funny. That to make me objective about that shows you how funny it was, Evan.
Always good. And I like when they bring these celebrities in and actually make them heels, which they did that, remember, early on with Jeremy Piven. I think he turned on somebody at the end, and Johnny Eater. I kind of like when they make the celebrities bad guys.
I thought they missed the mark on that, though. I would have had him just be full-on Ari Gold for 2 hours. That would have been awesome.
Well, that would have been funny, I'll tell you that. That would have been classic. I don't know if they would have had been able to edit some of the things he would be saying, though.
Exactly. That would have been awesome. Talk about what you're doing with the video blogging there at FAN and really anything else that you want to promote. But I know you're doing some serious coverage of wrestling on there and giving your takes on things for the people on WFAN.com.
I know. My bosses are actually allowing me to do Robert's Rant video blogs on WFAN.com by talking about wrestling. And they won't let me talk about it on the radio, so they won't let me do it on the video blog. So we got it up there at WFAN.com. Also, all the interviews that Joe and I do throughout the week. So it's kind of good stuff. Plus, I tweet all the time, which I figured out Twitter like months ago, and I thought it was stupid, and I'm addicted. All I do is sit there and tweet every single day, so you can you can follow me at twitter.com/Joe and Evan. And sometimes I'll give Joe's opinion, even though he doesn't know how to tweet because he doesn't know how to turn a computer on. But being the young guy, I will tweet for him occasionally. Those are two things you could check out. But I appreciate coming on your show. And I can't wait. Bronze in Brooklyn, man. Your reaction is just going to be classic.
Evan, I don't want to wait that long to get you back on, but I'm calling it right now. The Wednesday after July 1st, we need to have you back on one way or another. And I realize that I'm biased too, but even with me being biased, I think he signs the 3-year deal. I think he signs I'm not saying the full extension. That would make me a mark. I think it's the short one to keep it going because they're in a run. He wants to win. That's my
prediction. By the way, something right now. There are two things I hope for. Obviously, LeBron just coming to Brooklyn. The second thing I hope for is exactly what you just said, because you know if he signs a 3-year deal, and it's smart because he keeps their heels, they keep continuing to be more aggressive. He signs a 3-year deal. All that means is he didn't want to play in Newark and he wants to go right to Brooklyn. That's all that means. I mean, let's be honest. If he signs a 3-year deal, He just didn't want to take the, he didn't want to go on Jersey Transit, you know?
Okay.
He wanted to go right to Brooklyn, which I can't blame him for. So if he signs that three-year deal, you're still in a lot of trouble.
Could be. Could be, but there's probably more than one title coming in those next 3 years. And trust me, if we get even one while he's here, he can go wherever the hell he wants to. It's all good.
I understand.
We'll see what happens. Evan, like I said, I want to get you back on before then, but certainly the Wednesday after July 1st, we got to do it then, and we'll see where everything stands.
You got it. Have a good one, man.
Always so much fun, buddy. Thanks. Evan Roberts from WFAN in New York. Always love having him on. Always very entertaining.